Welcome to the Senate Committee on Rules for Tuesday, February 2nd. This is our first meeting of the 2016 session, and that means that we have to begin with an organizational meeting for the purpose of adopting our committee rules. So I will open our organizational meeting and work session and entertain a motion.
Madam
Senator
Chair.
Farioli.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move to adopt the proposed committee rules.
Thank you, Vice Chair Farioli. Moves to adopt the proposed committee rules. Members, these are the boilerplate rules for every committee, with the only addition for our purposes being the provision that executive appointments will be received by the legislature 21 days at a minimum before we schedule them for a hearing. And that has been in our rules for some time now.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, any discussion on the rules?
No, ma'am, I'm organized, ready for minority reports.
Thank you for that comment, Senator Boakley.
Within 1 hour, too, and during the committee. I got it down. I'm ready. I'm good. We're organized, ma'am.
Okay, so seeing no discussion, any objection? Motion carries. Rules are adopted, and we are in business. And I see that we have two legislators with us, and since Senator Hansel was here first, if Senator Steiner Hayward has just a moment, he's here on a resolution. Did you? Is that okay?
Okay, so I go first if you wish.
Well, Madam Chair, okay. I believe the good senator has seniority, so she would be first to testify.
And he's being a gentlemanly lady for first.
Okay, so
very brief.
Okay, so I will start then by opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 1562 and concurrently on Senate Bill 1570. And Senator Steiner Hayward is here on both bills. And Erin, would you please tell us about these two bills?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1562 modifies day in which odd-numbered year regular session of Legislative Assembly commences to be day after the adjournment of the organizational session, or if the day after adjournment is Thursday, Friday, a Saturday, or Sunday on the following Monday. This measure comes to you with no revenue impact and minimal fiscal impact. The other measure before you, Madam Chair, is Senate Bill 1570 requires Legislative Assembly to convene organizational session before odd-numbered and even-numbered year regular session. This measure comes to you with no revenue impact. This measure, too, has a minimal fiscal impact. Originally, this measure went to this committee with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. We did receive a message that it has been rescinded today.
Great. Thank you, Erin. And welcome, Senator Steiner Hayward, to the Rules Committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Elizabeth Steiner Hayward, State Senator from District 17. I'll begin by addressing Senate Bill 1562. As you will all remember, despite the fact that we have a fixed length for our long legislative sessions now, we often extend into July. That has several negative effects, not least of which being that many agencies have to start a new biennium without being sure of their budgets, which leads to uncertainty and inefficiency. Further, I think it's safe to say that we tend to get cranky when we have to be here over the 4th of July, which also leads to not the most effective ways of passing policy and working in the best interests of the state. So Senate Bill 1562 is a very simple bill. Our statutory language currently says that the legislative session during an odd-numbered year will begin on February 1st. It's a fixed date, with the exception of the Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. That's also included in this bill. That was originally adopted when we changed to annual legislative session because at that time, committee services, legislative council, et cetera, did not keep full-time staff year-round, and they needed time to ramp up. Further, we did not have a highly effective online bill system the way we have now with OLIS, and so it took a lot more time to get the bills printed, organized, et cetera, et cetera. Fortunately, all of those things have changed. I have spoken with the head of legislative council, the head of legislative fiscal, the head of legislative revenue, and committee services, and the presiding officers, all of whom agree that starting the regular session in odd-numbered years immediately after organizational days is completely reasonable at this time and would increase our efficiency and get us out of here in a more timely fashion. For our colleagues who live further away, it would also keep them from having to travel back and forth over a very short period of time. I have yet to hear anybody opposed to the bill. So why don't I stop there and take questions on that one if you have them, and then I'll move on to 1570.
Great. Thank you, Steiner. Hayward quits while she's ahead. Any questions on Senate Bill 1562? Okay, Senator Farioli, please
go
ahead.
Senator, for the more literal-minded members, what dates are we looking at?
Madam Chair, Mr. Vice Chair, it will depend because the organizational days are actually fixed by the Constitution, which says that the swearing-in day is the second Monday of January, and so that will depend, Senator, on when the second Monday in January is.
Okay.
And so I can't give you a firm date. It could be as early as the 8th, which would mean that we would start. That could be a Monday, and then we would start. Then we would start immediately after that, or it could be as late as the 14th or 15th. I lost 14th.
So, Madam Chair, just really, we'd morph directly from organizational days into session.
Yes, sir.
So you could just sort of circle January the 8th and consider the following minimum 35 days to be legislative session.
For long years only. This only changes it for long years,
okay.
Senator.
So 6 months then. Thank you, Madam Chair. That answers my question.
Okay, great. Any other questions? Okay, and since we're also open on Senate Bill 1570, would you like to testify on that as well?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Once again, Elizabeth Steiner, Hayward, Senate District 17. Senate Bill 1570 is a very simple bill to offer to require that we have it one organizational day prior to the onset of the short sessions. All of us had to sit through training this morning. All of us have had to sit through various organizational meetings and the challenges of having only informational hearings yesterday. Those of us who are legislators will have to go to another training tonight. And if we had one organizational day prior to the onset of the legislative session in the short session years, we could use our 35 days of allotted time more effectively and efficiently. As Ms. Seiler mentioned, that has a minimal fiscal impact. Again, it would improve our efficiency and allow us to operate more effectively with the time allotted. It would not change our constitutionally allowed 35 days for short session. It would just add one organizational days, which could be accomplished at the time of the presiding officer's preference, depending on where starting session. I'm sure it could be tacked on the legislative days, or it could happen right before the onset of session. Pretty straightforward, Madam Chair.
Okay, any questions on Senate Bill 1570? Senator Boquist.
Actually, my question is just for public clarity, what we're really talking about in both bills is coming in at the organizational day and simply sliding everything. It doesn't extend the length of the legislature in either case. All we're doing is sliding it backwards, so we do organizational, we get done with our business, and we go home.
Yes, sir.
Instead of making a break and having all kinds of stuff in between. So constitutionally, statutorily, the length doesn't change. It just slides it back towards the 1st of January, so it's more efficient and more effective.
Right, because the number of days of each session is in the Constitution,
right.
So we
right.
couldn't change that.
I just want people to think, oh, they're going to come in for another month, and then they're going to be here for another month, and we're all in danger for another month. We're actually trying to get it less danger.
I have a procedural question, Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Farioli.
Looking at Senate Bill 1562, would this bill contain a relating clause that would allow us to eliminate the short legislative session?
No, it's constitutional.
This is relating,
Senator Farioli,
relating to the sessions of the legislative
that
assembly.
That would be a question for legislative council.
But I think this could be turned into a referral to repeal of that short legislative session, Madam Chair.
Senator Farioli, we would be happy. We have legislative council in the room to ask them, but I think it probably would be.
You're taking a sudden interest in the ceiling rules.
To my good colleague on the table, I think it's an SGR. We'd be required to do an SGR.
I think he's right, Madam Chair. I withdraw the question.
Okay, thank you. So, and since legislative council is in the room, and I'm not calling you forward, but Senator Steiner Hayward, I'm assuming these two bills blend together without any problems, because when I first looked at them, I did sort of wonder, are they consistent with each other? And I assume that question has been asked and answered.
I have not. I will tell you this, Madam Chair. I have not asked and answered and gotten answers to that question. However, 1562 only refers to long session. It only changes the start date of the actual session. Doesn't do anything to that. 1570 only adds an organizational day before short session. So they are, in fact, congruent because one affects long session and the other affects short session. This is what happens when you talk with your hands a lot. So, Madam Chair, unless I'm significantly mistaken, I don't think there's any way that they can conflict with each other.
Okay, thank you. And I see Dexter Johnson here, and I'm assuming
Chair,
we you
intended to make this a short. Don't call him up.
Senator Ferrioli, thank you for your suggestion. Yeah. And Dexter, if you had anything to add, you're welcome to come forward, but I'm assuming that there's no problem. Great. Okay. Thank you for your testimony, Senator Steiner Hayward.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, very much. And my thanks to my colleague, Senator Hansel, for letting me go first. We've got a busy agenda.
Great. Thanks. So I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1562, open a work session on Senate Bill 1562. Senator Ferrioli?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move Senate Bill 1652 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Ferrioli has moved Senate Bill 1562 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion on the motion? Any objection to the motion? Seeing none, motion carries. We'll ask Senator Steiner Hayward to carry the bill on the floor. And I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1570, open a work session on Senate Bill 1570. Senator Ferrioli.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 1570 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Vice Chair Ferrioli has moved Senate Bill 1570 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any objection to the motion? Motion carries. And we'll ask Senator Steiner Hayward to carry that as well. And I'll close the work session and open a public hearing on Senate Resolution 201. Senator Hansel has been waiting so patiently. Please come forward.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Resolution 201 congratulates Happy Canyon Indian Pageant and Wild West Show on its centennial anniversary. This measure comes to you with no revenue and no fiscal impact.
Thank you, Aaron. Welcome, Senator Hansel.
Thank you, Chair Rosenbaum. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bill Hansel, Senator from District 29, which includes Wallowa, Union, Umatilla, Morrow, Gillam, Sherman, and part of Wasco County. I'm here to support and urge the passing of SR 201, the Happy Canyon Centennial Bill. This bill is to honor 100 years of the Happy Canyon Indian Pageant and Wild West Show. The Happy Canyon Show is split into two halves, for those of you who may not have seen it. The first half of the show focuses on the historical aspect of the local Native culture. The second half of the show introduces settlers and focuses on how the two cultures create a society in which both can reside peacefully. It is important to note that the entire show could not be possible without the many volunteers. For four nights during the Pendleton Roundup, more than 500 people with 50 different animals participate in the show. The Happy Canyon Indian Pageant and Wild West Show is well known for its distinctive quality. Since it's been presented annually since 1916, the cast includes generations of Native Americans and local community volunteers, making the show a long-standing family tradition. Roy Rayleigh wrote the Wild West portion of the show in 1914 by using the Oregon Trail stories his father would tell him. 2 years later, with the help from local Cayuse tribal member Anna Minthorn Wanasey, the Indian village life was written into the script. Since then, the Happy Canyon Indian Pageant and Wild West Show has grown to include a live orchestra of professional musicians that come from Oregon, Washington, and California. In 2011, the legislature, through SCR 2, a bill chief sponsored by my predecessor, Senator Dave Nelson, designated the Happy Canyon Indian Pageant and Wild West Show as Oregon's official state outdoor pageant. In conclusion, I would ask for your support for SR 201.
Thank you, Senator Hansel, and thank you for bringing this to us. And did we have any questions for the
Senator?
Not
a question, just a statement, Madam Chair.
Yes, go ahead.
I've attended several presentations of the pageant, and it is not the Hollywood version. It's not the Manifest Destiny version. It is, in fact, the history of the Native American tribe and the American westering settlers, complete with conflict, conflict resolutions, and I think history from a different perspective than perhaps people are used to seeing. And it's great theater, and it's well worth the price of admission.
Thank you.
Great. Thanks for your comment. Any additional? Yes, I see two hands. Go ahead.
Yeah, I have a question.
Senator Boqvist, go ahead.
Senator Hansel, is the short legislative session a good preview for the Wild West show? You don't have to answer that.
It depends if you're Native American or cavalry, I guess.
Thank you, Senator Boqvist. Senator Burdick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wonder if you would accept a friendly amendment to require the horse to jump from the platform into the pool.
That's beyond my ability.
Legislative short session.
Madam Chair, it's hard enough to get that cowboy to jump
from
the platform into the pool.
I would also like to take the opportunity, Madam Chair, to invite everybody to come to the centennial presentation. A few years ago, we had the centennial of the Roundup. And if I may be so bold as to ask, I'm assuming that I'll have the opportunity to carry it in the Senate floor. But we'd also like to schedule the hearing for this, if we possibly can, for President's Day, because we are working to get the court for the Happy Canyon, our two Native American princesses. And they're able to come, and one of them is still in high school, so this would facilitate their ability to come to the Capitol on a holiday rather than missing school, which might be a little more difficult for them.
Right. So I'm sure we can coordinate with the Secretary of the Senate and our committee. Capable committee staff will make that happen.
Madam Chair, Senator Hansel, we have spoken with the Secretary of Senate, and they are prepared to have your bill on the floor on the 15th to make those arrangements.
Great. Okay. Well, I don't see any further questions for you, so thank you very much for bringing this to us, and we'll look forward to seeing the princesses on the floor with you on the 15th. And I'll close the public hearing on Senate Resolution 201, open a work session on SR 201. Vice Chair Ferrioli.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I move SR 201 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Thank you. Vice Chair Ferrioli has moved Senate Resolution 201 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion on his motion? Any objection to the motion? Motion carries. And we will ask Senator Hansel to be our carrier on the floor. And I'll close the work session on SR 201 and open a public hearing on Senate Concurrent Resolution 201. And Erin, could you tell us about this as our witness is coming forward?
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Concurrent Resolution 201 honors Brady Adams. It comes to you with no revenue and no fiscal impact.
Okay, thank you very much, Erin. And members, I'll just remind you that this was one of our three committee bill introductions. So Senator Ferrioli and I collaborated on this, and I think all members knew that. So we'll welcome Annette Price to tell us about Brady Adams.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. For the record, I am Annette Price. I'm Government Affairs Manager, Government Affairs Director for Pacific Power. I'm here today, however, on my own to talk about a fella, Brady Adams, that I had the privilege of working for and obviously here in support of SCR 201. As you may know, Senator Adams, his life began with very humble beginnings. He lived with his mother in Vanport, who was a single mom. And so Brady, throughout his life, in the course of his life, went to school at Portland State University. He loves his Vikings. He moved to Grants Pass, and that community, I'm not sure, had ever seen anything quite like Brady Adams. A number of festivals, but I will highlight Bear Fest. Bear Fest, you would go down to Grants Pass and see bears all over the place, wooden carvings of bears. And I say that with a huge smile. Many of those were display around another wonderful place, Evergreen Federal Savings. And all of the employees there, I mean, Brady's love for making sure folks had fun in both in the workplace and in the community is something that we all adored about him. In coming here, so I had the privilege of serving as Brady's last chief of staff here when he was Senate president, and he had a respect and a love of this process and its people like I've never seen before. And we would, he used to sneak, and I'll probably get in trouble for saying this, he used to sneak members of the public up to the Gold Man and doing tours. He'd get the key and go do that. And it is with that delight that was infectious, not only for me personally, but for the number of staff that worked with him through the years. And finally, he was a family man. And his wife, Pat, daughter Jenny, son Ted, grandson Sam, he loved his family deeply, and much of what we saw, frankly, here in the building was what you would see at home with Brady, and and we shared that love. We were family too as his legislative staff, and I want to thank you for honoring him in this way. This man who spent his 8 years here, was elected in 1992 and finished his service in 2000. I just want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for honoring him and his service both in this building but also for the state of Oregon. Thank you. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much for helping get this drafted and bringing this forward, and also for helping us remember such a great legislator and statesman. I know, although I didn't have the pleasure of serving in the Senate with President Brady Adams, I do remember my first session in the House was his second session as Senate president, and I know it's mentioned in here, but particularly his deep understanding of growing up in poverty and his work on the earned income tax credit and other low-income tax credits in Oregon, I remember well. And I remember his advocacy as a banker continued after he left the legislature, because he was always somebody who was willing to weigh in when we talked about the need to continue or expand the EITC. So he certainly left his mark on this place, and I'm sure, along with the other members, really dismayed to hear of his early passing. So,
yes, ma'am, Madam Chair, and often, when the community or someone was in trouble, Senator Adams was first in line to be helpful.
Right.
So I appreciate the work that certainly you did with him on those issues.
So any questions for the witness? Yes, Senator Burdick.
Just a comment. Senator Farioli and I think are the only two on this panel who were actually here when Brady was president in the Senate.
Oh.
No, the first session.
His first session. You said when he was president.
No fighting.
But it was actually my freshman year, as it was Senator Farioli's, and it just some of the things about him just made a deep impression that have carried through my whole career. One of them was his negotiating style, which was to go as far as he could, to be very straightforward with where he was. He negotiated with an open hand, and when he got to the end, he said so.
Yes.
And then you knew that was true. And then you knew that if he told you he was going to do something, he did it. You didn't have to keep revisiting it. You didn't have to keep checking up on him. As I used to tell people, if Brady Adams says it, you can take it to the bank, literally.
Mm-hmm. Literally.
Great. Thank you for that comment. And any further discussion? Okay, I don't see any, so thank you again.
Thank you.
And members, I'll just mention we'll open a work session in a minute, but we have coordinated with the family. I know, I believe one of his sons is flying in from California to be here with us, so we have a date to hear this on the floor that I think is February 18th.
Yes, right? Madam Chair.
Okay, mm-hmm. So I'll close the public hearing, open a work session on Senate Concurrent Resolution 201. Senator Farioli.
Point of clarification, the extent of my collaboration in this SCR 201 was to commend you for a great idea and thank you for bringing it forward. It's not mentioned here that it's your resolution, but I think that for the record, we'll note that.
Thank you, Senator.
Madam Chair, I move SCR 201 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Farioli has moved SCR 201 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any objection? Motion carries. And it seems like it would be appropriate to have co-carriers and Senator Farioli and Senator Burdick, since you both did serve in the Senate with Brady Adams at the time he was Senate President, would you like to co-carry this on the floor? Great. Okay, well, that's what we'll do. And I'll close the work session on SCR 201. And that just leaves one remaining bill. And I'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1522. Aaron, if you'd like to tell us about this.
Yeah. He's great.
And I know we have somebody testifying by telephone as well as a witness in the room. So, hi, is this Sue Landriff?
Yes, it is.
Hi, this is Senator Dianne Rosenbaum, Chair of the Senate Rules Committee. Welcome to our committee hearing by telephone. We just opened a hearing on Senate Bill 1522, which declares May of each year as Cystic Fibrosis Awareness Month, and we are looking forward to hearing your testimony. So please, if you could just say your name for the record here and then go ahead and make your comments.
Sure. My name is Sue Landgraf. I'm the Executive Director for Cystic Fibrosis Research Incorporated, a nonprofit based in Palo Alto, California. I don't know how much time I have, but I appreciate you letting me join you by phone. Not only am I the Executive Director of a patient advocacy group for educating and spreading awareness of cystic fibrosis, I'm also the mother of a very precious 31-year-old daughter with cystic fibrosis. And for those of you who do not know, CF is the most common fatal genetic disease in North America. So I would like to go on record as saying that CFRI is in favor of passing the resolution in favor of designating May National CF Awareness Month. It's really imperative towards increasing public awareness about the most common fatal genetic disease in North America. And I appreciate your willingness to learn about CF and CFRI's work to extend and enhance the lives of those diagnosed with cystic fibrosis. So as I say many, many times a day, I hate cystic fibrosis. I hate that it begins to take the breath away from our children the day that they are born and ravages their bodies until they can fight no more. I hate that they suffer excruciating pain from endless lung exacerbations and gastrointestinal problems and that there is no cure. And that the fate of so many is to die from drowning in a sputum, in their own sputum or blood from hemorrhaging lungs or from lungs that simply cannot take another breath. So if you don't mind, I'd like to share a couple of comments from an article that I wrote that was published in the Huffington Post in October of 2014. Because this might shed some light on why it's so important to have May designated as National CF Awareness Month. Cystic fibrosis came to stay on Good Friday, 1986 at 5 p.m. when my toddler was 22 months old. Cystic fibrosis, I said to the voice on the phone, what is that? The voice that I'll never forget responded coldly, she'll be dead before she's five. Call a specialist. And the line went dead and our world crumbled. Cystic fibrosis, the most common fatal genetic disease in North America. Those born with it live through endless bouts of painful lung infections, liver damage, CF-related diabetes, and severe and painful gastrointestinal complications. It is debilitating to say the least. Oh, the joy when the gene that causes the thick mucus, which clogs up the airways and passages in other organs, was discovered. Now all of our friends said, she'll live. Wait, said those of us with our ethereal children, there is no cure yet. So we turned to CFRI for support and information because there really wasn't anything available, and we turned to CF specialists for ongoing care of this progressive disease. To gain weight, our daughter needed to take pancreatic enzymes with meals because the thick mucus blocks the ducts in her pancreas, thus preventing the release of her own enzymes to digest food. We never missed a day of multiple inhalation treatments and chest percussion therapy so that her lungs would remain open and give her the precious breath that she needed to survive. Oral and IV antibiotics and fungicides became her best friends. But at age 12, my daughter went into unexpected liver failure due to cystic fibrosis. After weeks of painful procedures to save her, we neared the end. Mother's Day 1997, she had 3 days to live, and miraculously, a perfect liver came to rest in her body. So 17 years later, after graduation from UC Berkeley with highest honors, 11 years of marriage, countless life highs and health lows, and the discovery of nearly 2,000 genetic mutations, she is still lighting up the world with her gentle nature, her passionate opinions about matters most important, and her continued fight to live with CF, a horrific disease. So I ask that you remember that this was written just a little over a year ago, because there is more to come. It is because of the love of my daughter that I've dedicated my life to fighting CF and why I'm talking to you today. I am proud to be CFRI's ED. We have constituents in Oregon. Our mission is to fund CF research, provide education and personal support, and to spread awareness of CF. For 40 years, we have played an integral role in the search for new medical treatments and for a cure. We've provided $9 million in research funding, much of which can be linked to the latest advances in targeted medications. So why is awareness so important? Well, CF is an orphan disease. It's a rare disease impacting less than 200,000 people in the U.S. With approximately 3,000 people in the U.S. diagnosed with CF, the need to heighten understanding of this complex disease is critical for the health and well-being of this population. Just because the numbers are small doesn't mean the disease is insignificant. It is painful, progressive, expensive, and deadly disease that drains the life and those with CF day by day. Both parents must be carriers of the mutated gene to pass it on to their children. For each pregnancy, there's a 25% chance that the child will have CF, a 50% chance that the child will be a silent carrier of one copy of the gene, and a 25% chance that the child will not be a carrier and not have CF. One in 29 Americans is believed to be a silent carrier of the CF gene. I obviously am a carrier, and I don't know how many people are in your room, but there are at least 30. The odds are that there's at least one other carrier in your room. So the basic issue with CF is the defective exchange of fluids across cells caused by a mutation in the gene for the CFTR protein. Secretions that are usually thin become thick and sticky, clogging ducts and passageways, especially in the lungs and pancreas. In the airways, this thick mucus creates a chronic state of inflammation and a perfect breeding ground for opportunistic infections, which destroy the airways, often leading to respiratory failure and death. While most people associate CF with lung disease, it is systemic, impacting the sinuses, pancreas, and reproductive systems. Those with CF spend hours each day waging a battle to slow the painful progression of the disease. This requires multiple sessions of daily respiratory therapy, dozens of daily pills, frequent rounds of IV antibiotics, and at times supplemental oxygen, and many, many hospitalizations. For those with advanced lung disease, transplantation is the only option to prolong life. But due to a variety of factors, including a shortage of organs, many do not survive the wait, and the survival rate is not impressive. It is critical that the Oregon legislature understands that CF is a killer, and that increased funds for research, drug review, immediate access to FDA-approved drugs, affordable co-pays for the drugs are extremely expensive, are vitally important to the diagnosis of CF. Your decision to approve the resolution can help improve the lives of this fragile population by making all of those issues available and known to the legislators and to the public. So I ask that you remember my daughter's story written a year ago, and here's an abbreviated version of what happened not too long ago. This year, my family spent the longest summer of our lives in the course of only 5 weeks. We endured all the challenges, agony, and heartbreak that can come with loving someone with cystic fibrosis. These are the times when we cry out, "I hate cystic fibrosis," and feel helpless as we are dragged into the dark abyss of this destructive disease. Yes, the past few years have brought remarkable new therapeutic drugs that are changing the course of the disease for so many, but for others, the drugs are not effective or their disease has progressed too far like it had with my daughter. My daughter turned 31 in June. She went into the hospital with a cold. 4 days later, she was on life support, and she lay dying for 4 weeks. The only option to save her was a double lung transplant, and she did get that. But I cannot tell you the agony that we all went through. Luckily, she is fine, and I just hope that you, by passing your resolution today, that you'll be able to bring awareness of this horrific disease to other families and help this fragile population to survive. So I'm sure I've talked way too much for you, but I do appreciate the time, and I hope that you do come to a positive conclusion on the resolution. So thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much, Ms. Landreth, for your testimony and also for sharing your personal story. We really appreciate it. And we do have another witness in the room with us, too. So you're welcome to stay on the phone if you wanted to hear her testimony. And
I would love to. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. So next, I will call Lori DeMello. DeMello? I'm not sure how to pronounce your name, but thank you. And if you could just say your name correctly for the record, and then...
Sure. Good afternoon. My name is Lori Marie DeMello. Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Courtney, and other community members. I'm going to talk a little bit about my experience and give you some window into to see a family. I'm just a mom. I'm not a director or work for anybody related to CF other than I know a lot about the disease as my son, who's 16 years old. His name is Robert Vogel. He has cystic fibrosis. This is a genetic disease, as Sue mentioned, and it's a genetic condition that predominantly affects lungs and pancreas, and it does affect other organs as well. Robert's disease causes the normal mucus secreted by his organs to be thick and sticky. This leads to breathing and digestive issues. In addition, infections are prevalent with patients like Robert. Because the scarring of infections, Robert will either slowly suffocate, leaving his lungs unable to supply oxygen to his body, or simply his immune system may lose the battle with certain infections. Unfortunately, there is no cure for Robert or for other patients like him. For Robert, this means he takes 37 pills a day, performs 2 hours of lung treatments a day, and eats a lot of extra calories. He does this just to stay healthy. For instance, Robert gets up at 5:45 a.m. to perform his first lung treatment of the day so he can make it to his first class by 7:30. He's an active high school sophomore and wants to stay that way, so he makes the choice to comply with his daily health regimen. I don't know any teenagers that like to get up that early, but Robert knows he has to do it. Robert's commitment to his health is supported by his family. His father and I are there for him emotionally and financially, but I won't lie to you, this is a tough disease. Beyond the number of doctor's visits, hospitalizations, medications, and other financial considerations, having a child with cystic fibrosis gives me a heavy heart. No one should have to perform chest physical therapy on their six-month-old baby just so that the mucus doesn't build up in their lungs. No one should ever have to hear their eight-year-old child ask them if they're going to die soon. No one should ever have to tell their teenager that his disease has made him sterile. No one should have to consider her child will likely die before she does. Why am I here today? I'm here to ask you for your consideration to make the month of May Cystic Fibrosis Awareness Month. I'm asking you to be part of the solution. If we have more awareness for this disease, this will help to create more interest and support for finding a cure. Now, thinking back to my days at University of Oregon and thinking of my communication classes in marketing, and also thinking of the opera referenced acronym AIDA, A-I-D-A, this comes to mind. Awareness leads to interest, which leads to desire, and finally, action. Help Robert and other cystic fibrosis by creating more awareness for the disease. One, so that they don't feel more so alone, and two, that ultimately greater steps will be taken toward finding a cure. Here are some thoughts for you. If your grandmother was born with CF, she would have likely passed away as an infant. If your mother was born with CF, she might have lived to age 5. If your sister was born with CF, she would have started high school, but not likely college. If your daughter was born with CF, she might be lucky to live to age 37. All this speaks to the steady advances in medical treatments of therapies which slow the complications of CF, resulting in extended lifespan. Yes, we have come far. However, patients with this disease, it can become more serious. As time progresses, CF leads to other serious health conditions. For instance, people with CF also have chances of developing diabetes, bone disease, and may require lung and liver transplants. Now, I didn't even know that Susan was going to talk about that today, and here I've mentioned it. So that was true with her child. It could be true for mine. Yes, it's true that CF patients are living longer, but living longer does not mean living better. There's still much work to do. I'm asking for greater awareness for cystic fibrosis. Awareness will stimulate action. CF families like mine need more medical advancement. Please be the solution, in part, toward creating greater awareness. Link the month of May to CF awareness. Let this be the first step of many, resulting in improved in quality of life for children and adults with cystic fibrosis. Thank you again, Madam Chair, Senator Courtney, and other chair members. Thank you again for letting me speak before you today. I appreciate your consideration.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you, Lori, for being here, for telling your story. Please convey our thanks to Robert, too, for letting you share his story. And it's a small thing that we can do. The Senate president brought this forward and designating the month of May along with what other states are doing. Seems like it will...
And you should remember his name. It's Robert Vogel because he is planning to practice law.
Great. We'll remember that. We're going to be hearing about him, I'm sure. That's great. Okay. Any questions for
Yes, Ms.? I'm open to any questions that you might have.
Okay. I think your testimony is pretty compelling. So okay. Thanks again.
You.
And I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1522, open a work session on Senate Bill 1522. Vice Chair Ferrioli, do you have
a motion?
Thank
you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 1522 to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Ferrioli has moved Senate Bill 1522 to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any objection on the motion? Motion carries. And I think we'll ask Senator Courtney has said that he will be happy to support this, but I think we'll ask Senator Manus Anderson, who is our nurse in the Senate, to carry this on the floor. And I'm sure we'll have an opportunity to talk about it again then. Okay, so that completes, I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 1522. And members, that completes our agenda for the day. So thank you very much for being flexible about the start time. And we, I believe, have this mandatory member training, just so you'll remember that at 5 o'clock. But with nothing further to come before us today, we're adjourned. Before us today, we're adjourned. Nothing further to come.